Hey, you may have heard that Stampede Plumbing had a change of ownership, and you're exactly right. They've been Rosie certified for years, so we had to check out the new owners, make sure they were Rosie certified worthy, and boy are they. They passed with flying colors. So if you've been a customer of Stampede Plumbing for years, no reason to look for another plumber. As a matter of fact, right now, with your home plumbing system probably being stretched to its max, they are running a $99 drain cleaning if you have an accessible clean out for all systems to keep them on the go. Get it? Keep it on the go. Get Stampede Plumbing.
Keep you on the go.
Keep me on the go. Yeah. You can find them at StampedePlumbing.com, or of course, because they are Rosie certified, you can find them at RosieOnTheHouse.com.
There was a lawn that was installed over our leach lines at the house. We're on a septic system. And you can tell right where those leach lines are right now, baby. That Bermuda is green in two rows. We're talking lawns here in the Outdoor Living Hour with Jay Harper. And we've got a number of text questions we're going to get to. But first, we're going to get to Julie on hold. We were talking about alternatives to your winter rye and your summer Bermuda. And Julie wants to know about St. Augustine. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I've got this St. Augustine grass. It's been here ever since I moved in 20-some years ago. And I love it dearly. But I've never thatched it.
Don't.
And I'm not sure what to do.
Don't. You do not want to dethatch St. Augustine.
That's what somebody told me.
No, it when it grows, it'll actually regrow and reroot into its own thatch. And you dethatch it, you may be taking everything that's alive with it. So it just does not lend itself to dethatching. It doesn't mind being big and thick. It likes humidity. It likes a fairly thatchy condition. If you want to, you know, mow it, you know, a little bit shorter, although it's hard to do that with St. Augustine. It's just something you have to kind of put up with. If it's a spongy, you know, thatchy kind of grass, and that's the way it likes it. So, yeah, that's one thing that's nice about it is it's pretty low maintenance. Kind of a grass. So if you've got a good stand at St. Augustine, leave it alone. Give it a little mild, fertilizer a couple times during the summer. And, you know, it likes, you know, you think about where St. Augustine grass comes from. It's, you know, it's the southeastern United States, the Bahamas, you know, hot, humid conditions. That's what it likes. So having some thatch there is not all bad for St. Augustine.
Great. Wait, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
You have the Rosie on the House approval to do nothing to your lawn this weekend.
There you go.
Thanks for the call. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. Or like so many of us do today that have forgotten how to talk on a telephone and you send a text, you can send that to 411-923. And, you know, we're going to get to the we've got a number of them here. But do you remember people used to call and they would sit on hold for 40 minutes while you went through every single call?
Yeah.
And you would spend 10 minutes with a caller, and now it's, you know, you've got it, you know, they've got you, you know, keep it moving. That, are we going to see a return to that? There's so many old world things that, you know, and I say old world 20 years ago, 10 years ago, that we used to do that we didn't do and we're getting back to.
Flips up. We may be doing Zoom radio, right? We actually look at each other and it may go completely the opposite. The higher tech. I don't know.
I don't either. I certainly, when you can do something as easy as text in a question, wouldn't sit on hold for 40 minutes.
Yeah, but I don't think people go back to that with kind of technology we have that way. But, you know, certainly there's more people baking bread than were a year ago.
Now, I think, and this is where technology isn't always better, I think what they're asking about is a sisu tree. And to read exactly what the text says, is there any other tree like the issue tree that grows pretty quickly?
Yeah.
And I think that's an autocorrect from sisu.
So if you're in the plant business, autocorrect is not your friend. You should try and detect somebody a plant list or spell out plant. And it's just, it is aggravating as all get out. It's changing every freaking plant name you've got to something else.
Google and Apple haven't figured out to, upload the index of plant names into their dictionary.
It does not work very well. Well, there's a lot of fast-growing trees in our neck of the woods. So if you don't want a sisu, a tipu, very good fast-growing trees. Heck, our desert trees, our Palo Verdes and mesquites, if they get adequate water, are almost too fast. So it's almost harder to find a slow-growing tree here than it is a fast-growing tree. So tipus and Palo Verdes and mesquites, even some of the acacias like salicinas and salignas are all very fast growing trees. So if that's what you're looking for. And we, years ago, they fought like crazy to get mulberries and olives off of the plant. In fact, they outlawed them. Well, that Pima County just passed a deal where, and I'm sure it'll come to Maricopa County, where we're going to go back to being able to plant mulberries and olives. So the old mulberry, male mulberry, the fruitless mulberries, they were very fast. I think it's a cool looking tree, but there's some great options if you don't want a sisu.
We planted two fruitless mulberries on the side of each lawn.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it's been 8 years, and I mean they are. The kids climb in them now. They're not as big as we'd like them, but they provide. I mean, you can stand underneath it and get shade. And, you know, in the morning, we start under this tree. And as the afternoon comes, we move to this tree to stay in the shade and on the lawn at the same time. And they are an extremely hardy tree. One of them has been killed 3 times. We call it our Jesus tree. It just keeps resurrecting. And it's actually now grown in a 2-trunk. Because it sprouted out after one of the...
Got run over by the lawnmower or the tractor or
something. You know, I can't remember all the different times, but the last thing that killed it was the goat stripped all the bark off of it.
Sure.
You know, that they don't seem to mind it, the older trees now, when the bark's a lot harder, but that new, young, fresh bark, they just stripped it to the core. And it came back as 2. Well, that double trunk mulberry is as tall as a single trunk mulberry that never... once was hurt. And so this one's got like 8 years of growth, and this one, you know, from being killed and coming back, has about 5 years on it, but it's the exact same height. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, they are resilient, and they're tough, they're fast growing. They were the staple of landscapes here for, you know, the 50s and 60s. You know, everybody had a mulberry tree in their yard. So we may see a comeback to those.
All right, next text question. A landscaper recommended a fertilizer tank to help deep root fertilize my trees. What are your thoughts on this type of system?
So a tank, I assume he's putting a liquid and it's injecting it into his irrigation system. It's great. It's a very convenient way to fertilize. It gives your plants a little bit of fertilizer every time you water. So from that standpoint, you get a nice even fertilization. You don't get, you know, big peaks and, hey, we forgot to fertilize this time. We missed a whole cycle. Now we're going to fertilize. It's just, of course, you got to remember to put the fertilizer in the tank as well, or you're just giving the plant water. So it you still have to fill the tank up to get that, but it's a great way to do it. Now, when you say deep root fertilizing, I think that's a little misleading because, number one, you have to be watering long enough to get the fertilizer down deep. Just because you're putting a liquid fertilizer on doesn't mean it's a deep fertilizer. The other thing that is a little misleading with deep is most of the feeder roots of trees and shrubs are not deep. You know, they're in the top maybe 12 inches or so of the soil. So we don't really need to worry about deep root feeding. Just make sure you're getting the fertilizer out where the feeder roots are, away from the trunk of the tree. That's my concern a little bit with people with drip systems. If you're feeding that way, is make sure you're adding and moving emitters, as the tree grows, and get them out away from the trunk of the tree. So it's a great, it's a good system. It's, it can be kind of convenient, but you do have to remember to keep the tank full.
One more quick question real quick, and then we'll get to Sue online. The, when you aerate your lawn, this texter wants to know, what should you do with the mud pellets that come out?
That's a good question. So the core aerifier, as you go along, it's popping the cores out as the next tine, hollow tine, goes into the ground. It pops the old one up out of the ground as you go along. I simply, after I'm done doing that, I simply go along. Well, I do two things. While I've got good open holes, I get gypsum or soil sulfur and organic fertilizer. I'm kind of partial to chicken manure. But so we get all that and we get
it. Would you say you have a plethora of chicken manure?
Yeah, plethora. and we get that so those holes are open. That fertilizer gets down in those holes. And then I just simply take my lawnmower with no catcher on it, and I go out there and just chop all that stuff up. And if you need to, you can smooth it around with a rake, but generally you don't even need to do that. Just chop it all up. Now that you've got that fertilizer and that gypsum or soil sulfur down in the hole, and just chop those up. If you wanted to, you know, you could rake those up, you know, throw them in a compost pile, you know, do something like that with them. But some people will go back in, they'll do that, and they'll go back in with those holes and sand them. I'm not a big advocate of using sand because it generally just kind of melds into the soil and doesn't really keep things opened up. But so a couple of things you can do.
And if it's a new lawn, your first year, or you're planting a lawn, or you're revitalizing one that hasn't been maintained in a few years, that Arizona clay is very hard. I would water it really hard the day before you core aerate.
Oh, before
back.
Yeah,
that core aerator is just going to bounce.
Yeah, I've seen, you know, where they've taken and you had to, you know, you tied a big cinder block on top of the aerator to give it some weight to weight it down. Yeah, your soil needs to be a little on the moist side, not muddy, but moist, so those tines will go down into the ground.
I see them where they even have water tanks on top of them now, so you can add water weight depending on how much it needs to penetrate.
The nice thing about that is, and when you're done, you can empty the water out, and the machine's not, you know, as heavy. So that's the hard part with those to get a homeowner to, is they're super heavy anyway, and can be a little cumbersome.
Sue Ann's in Queen Creek and wants to know about plant selection of a tree. Good morning, Sue.
Hey, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. So I just bought a new home in Queen Creek. And the one side of my house that I was so excited about, which is on, you know, the west side, I thought, oh, that'd be a great place for a giant shade tree, which I really need it because I'm on an acre. But I found out before my house closed that it's a leach field. So I'm looking for an idea of something that I can plant to provide shade to the west side of my house. I've got about 20 feet between the 6-foot wall and the edge of the leach field. Is there any kind of tree that has maybe tap roots or shallow root system that might be okay to plant?
Well, that's a tough one, you know, because, you know, a tree that has a smaller root system is going to be a smaller tree. So it's, you know, it's not going to probably get big enough, you know, to do what you want it to do. What I would consider doing is maybe something, you know, a large shrub that you could plant closer to the house that would still shade the house itself. Even vines, you know, trellises and vines against the wall of the house would work fine. But, it's unfortunate. But that'd be my suggestion, would be a hedge or a tall growing, something like sour orange or Japanese privet or something that got tall and slender. Tacoma orange bells, regular orange bells that got big, Tavisha, the yellow oleander, something that gets pretty big and you can kind of maybe keep it pruned a little bit so it'll, you know, it'd shade the house and you can plant it closer to the house, or put some trellises or structures up either on the house or out a ways from that, maybe a foot or two away from the house, and get some fast-growing vines on that.
They're messy, but bougainvillea is a great option for that as well. We did that on our sun exposure, and you know, it like I said, it's a messy tree and it drops a lot of flower leaves, but it's pretty, adds color. And another one of those that we intentionally cut it to the ground to when we prune it, and next season it's got, it's
can't
climbed up
it.
The whole trellis. Yep. Yeah.